Pacific in 1943, the tide of battle had turned. The American forces, led by the largest navy in history, were preparing to meet the embattled enemy. Millions of men, thousands of ships made ready for this great offensive. And at the island of Tarutupa in the heart of the South Pacific, the men of PT Boat 73, under Lieutenant Commander Quinton McHale, had more than their share of hazardous missions.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Hi, I'm Kerry Lester, and you are listening to TV Confidential.
Ed Robertson with a reminder that Michael Lerdon will join us in our second hour. Plus, we'll replay a conversation with another famous TV mom, June Lockhart, as part of our special Mother's Day weekend program. We hope you stay tuned for both those conversations. In the meantime, Greg Airbar is with us as we continue our look at McHale's Navy, all four seasons of McHale's Navy available through Shout Factory. Extra features include both of the McHale's Navy theatrical motion pictures released around 1964. Before we went to break, Greg was talking about how McHale's Navy was conceived as a broad farce that more or less was like Sergeant Bilko, only set in the Navy during World War II. Although I understand that it was originally conceived as an hour-long dramatic series, and I seem to think a pilot, an hour-long pilot, was actually filmed.
Yes.
Didn't go anywhere. And Gene L. Kuhn, who later became the man who, in many respects, made Star Trek the original series, Star Trek the original series, he was brought in as a script doctor, and he retooled the concept, and he made it possible for Universal/Review to REVU to sell the retooled McHale's Navy as a sitcom to ABC.
Yes, and Review Studios also gave us Leave It to Beaver and the Munsters, and McHale's Navy is no more an accurate representation of World War II than those shows.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is we talked to Marty Croft a few weeks back, and unbeknownst to me anyway, Cy Rose was one of the writers, and I think he may have even been story editor. Cy Rose helped create H.R. Puff and stuff, mm-hmm. and co-wrote the movie. And he was instrumental in developing the show, and Billy Hayes was essentially the Joe Flynn role, and she had two flunkies who she was constantly telling her schemes to and treating badly. And she was trying to get the flute and trying to thwart the good guys. And that's basically what Binghamton's role was, that he was always trying to get them, to trap them, to reveal to the Admiral what they were up to. But he would do these dastardly schemes to entrap them. And sometimes they were doing kind of sneaky things, but they were mild generally. And the irony is that sometimes a Japanese attack would actually come in handy out of nowhere. There'd be a Japanese attack and they'd do something heroic and there would be the "well done, McHale" from the Admiral, and then Joe Flynn would go everything would be fine. But or they'd do something nice for the orphanage or something like that. So they had hearts of gold. So he would always be thwarted, but so was Witchy Poo. So it's kind of funny that those shows are so closely related. But it was not ever to be taken seriously. However, what would be taken seriously now is the, I think if we were to, let's go into the office, I'll sit down at my desk and I'll fold my hands, I'll take my glasses, I'll fold my hands and I'll cock my head to the side and talk about that there is some troubling, uncomfortable incorrectness that is problematic about this show. And that is that there is a word they use constantly on almost every episode. The most endearing characters refer to the Japanese in a way that Nabisco refers to a cheese snack, little crackers that they're cheese flavored. I think you know what I'm referring to, but I don't want to say it because it's not nice. Well, they say it all the time on the show. They also have a POW, they call him a PW named Fuji, who basically does their delicious cooking for them and is an object. He's a stereotype. He's sometimes free to go dating and getting out. And by the third season, he comes and goes, but quite often they have to hide him from Joe Flynn because what's he doing there? Sometimes he pretends to be an entire Japanese army, but he's very clearly not something that is comfortable nowadays. So there are aspects that you had to be there and just know that there were veterans
again,
watching this show.
Yeah, you have, it was not to apologize for the use of what racial slurs on McHale's Navy, but it was written 50 years ago. It was written by a different generation of writers. It was written by a generation of writers who were not that far removed from World War II. And there was the audience was, look, I would like to think we're a little more enlightened today. But back then, there was still a lot of animosity towards Japanese Americans at the time, and that's reflected in the dialogue.
Yes, and we in no way are saying that is right. As Whoopi Goldberg says on the Looney Tunes box sets, it wasn't right then, it isn't right now.
Yeah.
But to not see them would be to pretend they didn't exist. And the fact of the matter is, McHale's Navy was a wildly popular show on ABC. It was, it was so popular, it was made into very popular films, the first one especially. And it gave us Tim Conway, because thanks to Rosemarie discovering him at a radio station, this show made him into a comedy star. And Joe Flynn had come off of the unfortunate kind of firing from the Joey Bishop show, rumored that he was just too funny, and Joey Bishop never liked that apparently, but it was better that he was on because Joe Flynn's entire career because he wanted to be a dramatic actor originally, but he simply became very obvious he was funny in the roles he played, and he always played and invariably this kind of role. I'll give you a little interesting trivia about the Joe Flynn character. The Hair Bear Bunch, which I've reviewed on TV Confidential, one of my favorite Hanna-Barbera cartoons from 1972, I believe, was kind of like McHale's Navy in a way, because Mr. Peevely and Botch, you know, you had the zookeeper and his flunky, and then you had the bears that never did anything they were supposed to do either, and he's always trying to get the bears. Well, that was supposed to be Joe Flynn playing Mr. Peevely, and he was hired to do it. And it was hard for Joe Flynn with that much dialogue to sustain the Joe Flynn voice. So Joe Barbera replaced him with John Stevenson, and he varies it between episodes, but he does a spot on Joe Flynn impression. They paid Joe Flynn, but he didn't do the voice in the series. Now, the same thing happened to Paul Lynde. However, Paul Lynde learned, and Joe Barbera actually trained him, because it's different when you do a voice for a cartoon or for radio You have to project it. It's hard to play yourself. And when Janet Waldo said that when Paul Lynde was doing the Perils of Penelope Pitstop, he held back. He wasn't being Paul Lynde enough. And that Barbera and it was either Gordon Hunt or Alan Dinehart or whoever was directing were coaching him on being Paul Lynde. And he was sensational at it, so much so that he did one of the greatest animation roles, which was Templeton in Charlotte's Web. And he did It's the Wolf, Mildew Wolf. He did a lot of it. Joe Flynn couldn't get it. He did do The Rescuers for Disney, but if you notice, the Mr. Snoops character isn't in it very much in the movie. But Mr. Peevely has a ton of dialogue. But Joe Flynn was, as Merv said, when Joe Flynn was a frequent guest, Merv would introduce him. And now here comes an actor who was a fixture at the Walt Disney Studios. Joe Flynn, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, he was known as the official, you know, curmudgeon in Disney movies in the 70s, in the Kurt Russell movies, in the Million Dollar Duck. You know, he was just in so many, and he formed that character on the show. Plus, there's a lot of guests. You know, Yvonne Craig is in one of them, and Marlo Thomas has an early role in one. So it's fun to spot some of those folks and a lot of the great character actors. The terrific Carl Ballantyne plays one of the crewmen. I mean, he's so good. He's the flim flam guy. It does his funny magic act, which he was known for, the Great Ballantyne.
Yeah, as did Billy Sands was a crew member, I believe. Gavin McLeod.
Gavin McLeod was in it a couple of seasons as Happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, and that wasn't mentioned much with his passing. That wasn't brought up much, but that was probably his first sitcom.
I believe that was his first sitcom. So, you know, a lot of familiar faces in McHale's Navy, all four seasons available through Shout Factory, including the two feature motion pictures that were made circa 1965-66, one of which, McHale's Navy joins the Army. That's the one without Ernest Borgnine, correct?
Air Force. Yeah, McHale's Navy joins the Air Force. Does not have Ernest Borgnine, and those are sold separately.
Okay, they're not part of the box set.
From the television show.
Okay, because I misspoke, we'll clarify this. All four seasons of McHale's Navy available as a box set through our friends at Shout Factory. The two McHale's Navy movies are available as separate releases from Shout Factory. You can read Greg Airbar twice a month, cartoonresearch.com. We'll continue our special Mother's Day edition of TV Confidential on the other side of the break. We will replay conversation with June Lockhart that originally aired in 2015. Plus, we'll play a brand new conversation with Michael Learned. All that and more coming up in hour number two of TV Confidential. Stay with us. Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/TV Confidential, x.com/TV Confidential, or at TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.